I'd like to call this meeting to order. Welcome to the meeting of the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee. Vicki, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Aftis. Trustee John Butler. Al Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Ferrero.
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Here.
Trustee Marilyn Michonne.
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Buscema.
Here.
And Committee Chair Eric Wazers.
Here. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice for this meeting has been posted?
Morning, Mr. Chair. Appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and there is a quorum to conduct today's meeting.
So you have before you the meeting agenda. May I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The agenda is approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of May 9, 2019?
So move.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So this is the opportunity for me to make some comments. First of all, I'd like to welcome Montel Gales as the vice chair of this committee. So Montel, welcome. I do have some comments this morning here. I'm not sure how many people know, but our former student trustee, Nathan Hayes, this was about 40 days or 61 days ago, was hit by a car and seriously injured and has been in ICU for over 40 days. And he has many broken bones and a traumatic brain injury. So he is a Husky, and so I think we should all have him in our thoughts and prayers. One thing, I went to see him a few times in the hospital. First two times he was unconscious, and I left him my favorite Husky football hat, baseball hat, I should say, and my pin, my Board of Trustees pin. And I told him, and sometimes I like to think that people can hear when they're unconscious, that I'll have that pin back when he comes to a meeting and gives it to me. So I'm looking forward to his return at some point in time, but just something to kind of make everybody aware of. At this time, I'd also like to note that Trustee Aftis has joined the meeting. At this time, I'd like to recognize the members representing the University Advisory Committee that are present. Alex Gelman and Jeffrey Royce are the members representing FACFO. The rest of the names are University Advisory Committee member, blah, 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 okay. Alex Gelman, Jeffrey Royce, Kendall Thu, Sarah Marsh, Jason Hanna, and Kathy Doderline. Do any of you have comments for the board? And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Trustee Wazowicz. As I mentioned at the last committee meeting, I do have some remarks, but I'm going to hold them until the full board meeting. So thank you. Anybody okay. else? Thank you.
You're building the anticipation.
Exactly. I'm with bated breath waiting for that. Public comment. Mr. Perry, have any members of the public registered a written request to address the board in accordance with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws?
We've received no requests.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to ask Vice President and Chief Financial Officer Sarah McGill to present the university recommendations.
Sure. Thank you. Good morning. Before we dive into the recommendations, I would like to draw the committee's attention to the agenda. It's typical that we start the meeting, start the university presentations with financial updates. With where we are during the year, it's August. We are still in the close process for fiscal year 19, and we have not yet concluded the first quarter of fiscal 20, so there is not a financial review to be had. Don't worry, though. We are preparing for a robust conversation in November, and we'll have both the end-of-year results and first quarter results to discuss at that time. But now we can move on to the first agenda item. Or the first action item, excuse me. Agenda item 7A, fiscal year 2021 budget request. We just acknowledged the completion of fiscal 19 and the start of fiscal 20. Each year at this time, we also begin efforts to prepare for fiscal year 21 and seek the board's approval of the overall level of state funding requested for the upcoming fiscal year. This total request amount is recognized as the university's budget request throughout the budget development process. University staff will reference this request figure when developing our detailed fiscal year 21 budget request and other information that's reported to the Illinois Board of Higher Ed and the Illinois General Assembly. For fiscal year 21, Northern Illinois University requests a funding level of $93,628,600. This amount includes a base funding level of approximately $91.1 million and $2.5 million for academic program requests. At this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse the budget requests of $93,628,600 to ensure the timely preparation and submission of the university's fiscal year 21 detailed budget request to the IBHE and subsequent reports to the General Assembly, and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 12, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Montel. Discussion. Any discussion, any thoughts?
I think one discussion we're going to have, and we probably need to do a roll call on this vote. For those of you who haven't, I was going to announce this at the special meeting here in a few hours. Another one. We're going to build the Trustee Herrero. Several weeks ago, was appointed to the Illinois Board of Higher Ed. She was going to, of course, continue to serve in her role as trustee of NIU. Her role on the Board of Higher Ed is to represent the public trustee boards in the state. So all of the public state universities, four-year institutions, she will represent the Board of Trustees from those institutions on the Board of Higher Ed. I became a little bit nervous when I saw this, just because this is a recommendation that is going to be going to the Board of Higher Ed. I would leave it to her to make a decision on whether to abstain from this vote at this time until we could further research. Is there an issue with her voting on this or not?
We'll abstain later.
So, yeah, right. So that's why I would recommend it at this point until we have a chance to research it further, to do a roll call vote. Yeah.
I think that's prudent, and I think that makes some sense.
So well,
but can we all congratulate her on the appointment?
So while I'm you know, supportive of this, I am going to abstain, but don't want you to think that anything different.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bob.
So this is a significant increase from our current year, which is a significant increase from the year prior. Do we have any indications from the governor's office or from legislative leaders that this kind of budget is going to be, shall we say, realistic or achievable?
So the budget is in, the total number includes two components. The operations base funding level, which is about 91.1 million, that would be about 3.5% over what we received this year. The amount that we received for fiscal 20 was 5% above, which was, to your point, a sizable increase. We're still below our high water mark of $91.1 million worth of funding, which was our fiscal 15 number. I believe that in earlier comments, the governor has indicated that he sees that higher ed needs a level of investment. We're unsure what that will translate to at this time, but we are committed to asking for an increased number to cover increased costs. You heard Dean Block talk a little bit earlier about costs associated with running academic programs. We have some state programs increased to the minimum wage component and other pieces that the additional funds would be helpful for, not to mention helpful to supporting our students as we look at our financial aid contribution, scholarships, and other items.
Well, I certainly compliment the priorities that you've put into this proposal. And in view of the meeting we just had earlier with the needs in nursing and health information, it's great to see some additional funding that could be achieved in these programs.
What was the request that we made last year to the Board of Higher Ed? Wasn't it in this range? It was a similar amount of money that the request we made last year.
Yep, we made an ask of $93.6 million last year.
Yeah, so it's the same.
I think it should also be noted that we're playing catch up. Mm-hmm. There were some lean years there. So, you know, it's good to see that the governor's office is putting a priority on education, and hopefully this is a trend that we see going up.
We hope so.
Any other discussion? Okay, we have a motion on the floor. All those
we need to do a roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we do a roll call vote?
Trustee Rita Athes?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Abstain.
Trustee Madeline Marchand?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Committee Chair Eric Wasmans?
Yes.
Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 7B, fiscal year 2021 IBHE capital budget request. Like the fiscal year 21 operating budget request, the fiscal year 21 capital budget request is submitted in the fall. This timeline is in order to meet the Illinois Board of Higher Education and state capital project review and approval submission schedules. The capital budget request consists of two principal categories of projects requesting state funding support and a third category that provides notification of anticipated non-instructional projects that might eventually require specific IBHE approval. 11 capital projects, including the new building referenced earlier in Dean Block's presentation, totaling approximately $326 million, and 20 capital renewal projects totaling approximately $57.2 million are proposed for submission. And I'd like to note that there was an incorrect number in your materials. We quoted $63 million. I want to confirm that the number we're seeking approval for is actually $57.2 million.
Less is always better.
For sure. At this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 12, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Montel. So we have a motion and a second, and we will do the roll call vote on this as well. But is there any discussion?
The building that was referenced during Dean Block's discussion is in this capital budget, correct?
It is. It's our first priority. It's listed on page 7. It's the Health Informatics and Technology Center. We estimate a total cost of about $77 million. And we did receive approval for fiscal year 20 in the capital budget for fiscal year 20 for some planning funds. We haven't received those funds yet. We don't know the status. But this is also the building it was referenced. This has been on our priority list for about 20 years. And it just made its way to the second overall priority, second-ranked priority on the higher ed list. So we're very hopeful and pleased to see that this is moving forward.
Well, so that was going to be my next question. So even though we received indication when the fiscal budget was approved for the state of Illinois that this building was a part of that approval process, we still need to keep it on this list.
Correct. We received approval for planning funds, but we are still awaiting the receipt of those funds and want to continue our commitment that this building remains a priority for us. So we're going to continue to reinforce it on the list.
The state investment in capital is expected to flow over 5 or 6 years, and so it's important that we keep this at the top and the forefront of our list so that the state keeps it at the top and the forefront of their list, but we don't expect to receive a check for $70 million to start the building
so the board should
this year.
So the board should expect going forward, Dr. Freeman, that until we receive these checks, that the capital projects will remain on this list.
Absolutely. Western Illinois University has had multiple groundbreakings for their Performing Arts Center, which is still not under construction. So we're certainly hopeful that with the new attitude towards investment in higher ed, we won't experience that, but you will expect to see this over again.
And the list, I don't know what page it's on, but page 14, it looks like, or at least the page number is 14. We're number two on that list with the health informatics and technology center. That list, the priority of that list, that's compiled by the Board of Higher Ed. That's not our list.
That's correct. Right. The Illinois Board of Higher Ed takes the lists of various universities and then runs an algorithm.
Great to see we're number two on that list.
We'd rather be number one, but we'll take two, I guess.
Any other discussion? Sarah, I do have a question here. So when you said that we've had approval for the planning to start, but we haven't received the money, can you kind of fill us in? How does that, so someone at the state says you're approved, how long is there usually between that time and a check being cut?
That's a good question, and I think one that we're trying to understand. So the state released a comprehensive capital bill program for universities and other organizations throughout the state, and different funding amounts were approved. I'm looking at Matt Streb, and he should feel free to chime in. But different funding amounts were approved, but not yet released. And my understanding is that's contingent on the state actually having the funds.
And I believe the planning money is in a different line item than the construction money, but I'll let Matt go ahead.
It is. Trustee Pritchard actually probably could explain this better than anybody in the room. But that is correct. And one of the things you have to be aware of is that the money for the capital there's very little money there right now because most of the money for the capital is coming from gaming expansion. And so we don't have new casinos yet. Sports betting is now going to be legal in Illinois, but it takes a while to get that set up. If you followed some of the discussion on news on like Chicago's casino, for instance, they're having trouble finding where they're going to actually put the casino. There's questions about whether the revenue are going to be as great as they were projected. So this is a long-term project. We're very, very excited that the state is committed to capital approval, renewal and improvement, but we've got a long way to go still. So yeah, you get something that is authorized, but that's different than actually having the money sent to the university. Jenna will talk about this a little bit later in real estate. I don't want to spend too much time on it now, but if you look at our NICS building, we have been authorized for $15 million for NICS, but we have not received any money from the state yet, is an example.
So Eric, I'd just comment that if you go back to the 2010 capital bill that we had approved, it also had specific sources of revenue that were going to generate the funds for that capital program. And many of them have not materialized even 19 years later because the sources of revenue didn't produce the revenue that they anticipated. So the same may be the case here, is that we have new sources of revenue, but if they aren't implemented and don't generate the type of revenue we're figuring, we're going to have a long wait for some of these projects.
And that's all coming from the gaming and pot revenue then, or?
Not pot, just
not
gaming.
Not pot, it's just gaming?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not the gas tax either, it's all
okay.
Gaming. Yeah.
All right, so we should all gamble more if we want. Okay.
Or use marijuana, or.
Oh, no, he said that.
Or be a philanthropist.
Yeah, be a philanthropist. That would be the quickest way to get it in. So, all right, any other discussion? Vicki, can you call the roll on this vote, please?
Trustee Rita Ethis?
Yes.
Trustee Jen Butler? Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Abstain.
Trustee Madeline Marchand?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Burcima?
Yes.
Committee Chair Eric Wasmus?
Yes.
The motion passes,
yes.
All right, moving on to agenda item 7C, Student Recreation Center Changing Room Remodel Capital Project Design Approval. The Student Recreation Center locker rooms are largely unchanged since the original construction in 1983. Student lifestyle and expectations have changed significantly since that time, and the existing configuration, fixtures, finishes, and infrastructure need to be updated to best align with the needs and preferences for NIU's diverse student population. Recreation amenities are an influential factor for student recruitment and an investment to make the locker rooms more inclusive, appealing, as well as address ADA components is essential. The funding requested is $1.1 million to be funded by auxiliary reserves. Kelly Wesner-Michaels, Associate Vice President for Student Affairs and Dean of Students, is with us today and will provide additional information and respond to questions during the discussion for this item. At this time, Board of Trustees approval is requested to proceed with design development. Approval for construction will be requested at a subsequent meeting once additional details for the project can be developed. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its next meeting on September 12, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for approval of this recommendation?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second discussion. Kelly, welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I'm really excited to be here to talk a little bit about the positive impacts we believe that this proposed renovation would bring to our campus. As Sarah mentioned, this facility was born. It was built in 1983. So when you think about a modern fitness facility, obviously we have steps to move forward, and this would be a really significant step in that process. For us as a campus that really values making sure that all of our students, guests, faculty, and staff feel included on our campus, these renovations would really help. The locker rooms would become ADA compliant, and we would use universal design in the process by which we would do the renovations. They would be gender neutral, inclusive, culturally appropriate, and really respect the privacy needs of our users. From a recruitment standpoint, we know that students look to the amenities on a campus as they're evaluating where they want to land for their college education, and this would be a step forward with that. And in terms of retention, we know that students who are involved in different recreation facilities are socially connected, they're engaged, that increases their overall success. And obviously the health benefits of reducing stress, this plays an important piece in that as well. This renovation would kick off one of the important initiatives that we have moving forward, which is a collaborative campus initiative moving toward a healthy campus and really focusing on well-being across our faculty, staff, and students, and this would be a great step forward in establishing that. It's also a logical step for us. We've done a lot of work in our auxiliaries overall, and we've expanded the campus dining strategy. The Neptune Hall upgrades have had great reception, and students are really excited, and that facility's full for the fall. We have a home student center renovation, so this just makes sense that this would be the next step, as we really haven't touched this particular facility. By far, this is the number one issue that we hear from students, staff, faculty, and patrons, that this is the largest need for that particular facility, and that's a concern we've heard over many, many years. And lastly, I want to point out that this hopefully will also enhance the potential for revenue generation, as we do have memberships from the community, faculty, and staff. And this would be an opportunity for us to meet a more attractive option for them as well. So as stated, this is a $1.1 million project, total design to final construction, and it would use auxiliary reserve funds. So with this, we're seeking approval for the design phase specifically, and we will return to you for the construction approval.
Thank you. Any questions for Kelly?
So we're basically taking the two locker rooms and converting them into changing rooms or creating changing areas. $1.1 million, that's a lot of money for two locker rooms being converted. So what's driving what to me looks like a pretty big price tag?
So I'm going to bring up my colleague, John Heckman, to talk a little bit about the specific changes that we're looking at.
It's a good question, and the simple answer is plumbing. And you think about a locker room, and moving a wall is one thing, but when you have electrical and plumbing features behind it, it starts to get very expensive when you want to reconfigure all the underlying infrastructure that's there. So that's my simple response to that right now.
Can you give a breakdown as to the architectural costs versus construction costs?
Not precisely. We have the overall project investment amount that we want. Generally, the design costs run about 10% on roughly. More details are going to be developed here as we get into that, and we'll get a more refined overall cost estimate.
Sorry, I'm confused. The 1.1 includes planning and construction and design, so it's all of it.
That's correct. We'll design around that amount, and if something differs as we get into the details, we'll come back later and explain if we have to vary from that. But right now, the intent is to all-encompassing 1.1.
Can you give a little background as to how you develop that 1.1 budget?
It's a way of estimating at a very macro level and trying to assess compared to other projects that we may have seen and experienced to try to get a rough idea of what's a cost per square foot of doing a type of project that has a plumbing emphasis on it like this, and that's our general approach.
What's the square footage or capacity in terms of people that this could handle?
I'm really lacking in that amount of detail to answer that. I don't know if anyone else can talk to what the changing rooms can handle as far as people right now. I just don't have that detail in front of me.
Well, I will say this. I think this is a good thing to do because, as we mentioned earlier, about students being some of the best marketers that we could have, if they're happy, I think this is something that will advance the university.
And not to mention the ADA piece. I think this is probably long overdue. I do have a question about the design piece. I'm assuming when you talk about campus-wide design, you're going to bring in student voices into the design, make sure that they're
Yep, absolutely. We will make sure that students are incorporated into how we make this design really meet their needs as well as the campus community, and then work that and use our students to really start talking about what wellness is on our campus as a whole and move forward with that as well.
I just have a quick question for my clarification. To be honest, I'm not an avid user of the recreation facility on campus, but my understanding is there's currently a male and a female locker room, and you mentioned gender inclusive, so will they both be gender inclusive, or will there still be a male and a female designated?
Very good question. I myself am kind of old school, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around exactly how do we do this. There have been examples out in the industry where this has been done, and I think we need to study that a little bit more to see how do we accomplish that in the right manner to meet everyone's anticipated desires.
Mm-hmm. And just a recommendation for you to get the student perspective, reach out to Director of Athletic Affairs. I believe his name is Audrey Colomino. I don't think I'm pronouncing that correct, but I think he would be very interested in getting involved with this.
Absolutely. I mean, as students are returning to campus next week already, we are excited to get folks, our students, back in this conversation as we return. Thank you.
I'd just like to offer the committee, that's one of the reasons that we are committing to come back before proceeding with construction, is so that there is visibility into the numbers, what that will allow us to do in terms of the redesign in meeting our goals, and then to better respond to some of the questions about how our proposal would actually play out before we move forward. So there's a built-in check that for some of the questions we just don't have answers to at this time, we can come back and give the committee confidence that we're moving forward in the right way.
I would just suggest that if you look at the new Northwestern Health and Recreation Facility, they've done a tremendous job in their locker room area for, and the gender issue. So that might also be a model that you could look at.
I think Sarah knows a few people at Northwestern, so maybe you could help out. Any other discussion? Well, we'll call the question, and I don't believe we need a roll call on this one. So all those in favor of the recommendation signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you. Item 7D, bowl game participation expense. This is an item that has been on the agenda a couple of years now. It has been recent practice that the university requests that the Board of Trustees delegate to the president or designee approval for all necessary and proper expenses related to NIU's participation in a postseason bowl game competition. This includes, but isn't limited to, bowl agreements, expenses relating to ticketing, tickets, travel, transportation, lodging, rentals, insurance, dining, non-alcoholic beverages, fees, services, broadcast rights, apparel, commodities, equipment, and supplies. Further, such approval is requested to also authorize the president or designee to undertake all business transactions necessary in relation to an anticipated upcoming bowl event, reporting actions taken where required beyond customary authorizations at a subsequent meeting of the board. For 10 of the past 11 football seasons, the NIU football team has been invited to participate in a postseason bowl game. This request for designated approval is necessary due to the quick timeline required in support of the bowl process and the need to secure travel, lodging, additional services, et cetera. At this time, the university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 12, 2019.
Do I hear a motion for the approval of the recommendation?
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Yes. I think when we had a chance to talk a little bit about this earlier, we talked about if you could provide us with some detail as to how much was actually raised, or I don't even know if that's the right word to use, but what did we get out of this after putting this money forward?
Sure. There is a shared cost structure between the MAC and MAC institutions, and I'm going to invite Deborah Boughton, who's the Chief of Staff and Senior Associate Athletics Director, to the podium to speak in further detail.
Thank you.
Thanks. So bowl participation, every bowl is a little bit different. We've been, like I mentioned, 10 of the last 11 years we've been to bowl games, and they all have a unique outcome structure financially and how they impact the institution. One year we went to the Orange Bowl, and that looked really different than the regular bowls we normally go to. But we'll stick with the normal bowls that our conference supports. So there's a shared cost model. All the institutions give in to a cost, shared cost. And then each institution that is eligible for a bowl or gets invited to a bowl, those things are different, actually. We receive resources to help us fund the bowl game. In addition to that, so that's in the neighborhood of about this year it's going to be $350,000, okay, to each institution that goes. In addition to the $350,000, if it's a trip that requires a charter flight, the MAC pays for that directly. So it used to be we had to come up with the funds to pay for the charter flights. Now the conference does that, so it eliminates a little bit of logistical challenges on our campus so quickly. And it also allows the conference to do a little bit of cost work and using one vendor instead of us all using different vendors. Additionally, we are allowed to keep all the revenue from any ticket sales that we have, so sky's the limit on how many tickets we might sell. And then the variable differences there after that on what we spend on the bowl are funded by our department budgetary resources, which we plan for every year. We plan for a MAC championship. We plan for a bowl. So that's what kind of fills in the difference. Again, I'm speaking obviously just for our department expenditures. I think the campus does some things here and there as far as maybe presidents travel to bowl and some other things that we wouldn't account for. But generally, that's how it works.
So would you say then, I mean, I'm not looking at this as being, as far as being cost neutral here, but we're not out as much as what we're saying here.
Right, and sometimes we are. There have been, like I mentioned, every bowl looks a little bit different. When we went to Detroit, that trip looked different from an expenditure standpoint. We also, the trip we had last year to the Boca Raton Bowl, we were on campus, I think, 2 days, so we didn't have to feed 100 guys while the dining halls were closed. So each one looks a little bit different as to what the requirements look like. But as long as I've been here, I've been committed to staying within what we get, what we sell, and what we've allocated. So it's a little bit of a, I wouldn't say moving target, because that sounds a little bit ambiguous, but each bowl looks so different. And so we have to approach it to say, okay, when is it? What's it going to cost when we're on campus? You know, how are we going to get there? Who's going to go? So there's a lot of, I mean, Bahamas may be completely, if we have the Bahamas Bowl, that's going to look completely different than any others. Do we do passports, right? So every year since we've been in the Bahamas Bowl, we buy passports for all of our incoming student athletes, football student athletes. So you can see that they all look a little bit different. So it really takes a lot of planning and effort to stay within, again, what we receive, what we can sell, and then the allocation that we've put in our budget to support that trip.
So help me. We don't know how much it's going to cost right now, right? So you'll come back to us in September with an idea of what that might
be. I don't think I'd be able to come back in September. Really, I won't know. I won't know what the bowl will look like until December 6th. Right, until December 6th, right? So we know where we go. And then we go through a number of iterations of, okay, we know when we go, we know when we leave, we know what our campus costs are, and this is how we're going to spend what we receive from the conference, what we project from the ticket sales, and then what we've saved budgetarily to fund this. So at the end of the day, I mean, you mentioned about, you know, profitability. We have been. We made a little money on the Detroit Bowl. We made a lot of money on the Orange Bowl. We made a lot of money on the Boise. We went to Boise a few years ago because we didn't have a lot of people that went because we were in the coaching transition. So, but again, it's critical that we stay within those three resources that I mentioned. So that's what we will do at the end of the day.
President Freeman?
So the historical reason for asking the board to delegate authority for approval to the president at this point in time is within the amazing success of our football team, the expenses that are incurred with going to a bowl, the value that's realized in terms of alumni engagement and unearned media, the timing of the bowl announcement seldom works with the board schedule. And in fact, I was fortunate enough to be here in 2012 as a member of the university when we went to the Orange Bowl. And literally, had we not had the fortuitous coincidence between the Orange Bowl invitation and a board meeting within 24 hours, we would not have been able to get the contract signed and participate in that bowl. So we are asking you as a university to delegate authority to the president with trust that we will operate the way we always have, to be fiscally responsible when attending a bowl game, so that that opportunity is not lost to the university because of scheduling issues.
And then we get a report, essence, after the fact, yes, of what the expenses were.
Yes.
So we will see the final expenses.
Yes. The final expenses that I can report on, right? I mean, I just want to be clear. There may be other things that folks are doing in investing in this, but the department expenses, absolutely.
I'm assuming that the numbers that are in
they're at the bottom.
If you scroll up, are they on this sheet?
Yeah, right. They're at the bottom.
Right, if you go the other way.
Other way.
Right.
I'm assuming that those numbers are only athletics numbers.
That's right. Correct.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's the only thing that I could report on.
Yes. I understand that.
Thank you.
Why was 16 so much higher than the other 2 years that we went? We didn't go in 17.
So that included the charter flight that the conference paid for. So just to be all inclusive of what was spent on the bowl. Right.
So we were reimbursed.
The conference paid for it. We do recognize it as an expense of the bowl game, although we didn't pay for it directly. Right, we did in the shared cost.
Okay.
So in theory, everyone's paying into the bowl expenses, and then they are deciphered out to who achieves the bowl. Okay. If that makes sense. We pay money to the conference, we get some of it back, whoever goes. If we don't go, we're still paying in.
In the interest of transparency, we're taking a conservative approach in reporting the expenses.
Any other discussion?
All right. So I would just say this is a great vote of confidence in our athletic team that we will go to a bowl game.
And I might also add that this is something that the University of Illinois at Champaign does not have to deal with.
That's right. Ooh. Oh.
Now that does go into the minutes.
Did I say something that was not true? Coach.
Do we have champagne ice cream?
Maybe they'll play us in football one of these days. Anyway, without further discussion, can we have a vote on this recommendation? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. That concluded our action items for this meeting. Moving ahead to the informational items, we have four university reports, items 8A through 8D, that are provided as written updates. We have no formal discussion planned for these items, as the write-ups are quite comprehensive. I'm happy to pause for questions from the committee on the written updates for items 8A through 8D and respond to any questions or observations. If there are not any, we can move forward to the presentations.
Does anyone want some extra time to look at this at all? Everybody's good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right, thank you. Agenda item 8E, campus facility project updates. John Heckman, Associate Vice President for Facilities Management and Campus Services, will walk through facilities activity on campus.
Good morning again, and it's always my pleasure to bring a little highlight of what we're doing around campus. So again, just a brief coverage of some of the more maybe visible and some maybe not so visible projects that we have, but hopefully in the end you'll see that we have quite a bit happening in comparison to past years, a lot more than what we've done in past years. First one I wanted to cover is an older project, relatively. We completed it back in May, but wanted to come back and say, yes, we got it done. It was an important project for the Jordan Center. It took advantage of donation dollars coming in from Northwestern Medicine and from the, I want to make sure I get this right, Phi Sigma Kappa alumni. So very important that we've recognized that. Nice improvements for the nutrition center they wanted to introduce there at the Jordan Center. A couple other academic improvements, also based on donations, I wanted to highlight. One is at the Anderson Hall, where a motor development lab is being created for the kinesiology and physical education area. Basic space improvement to reconvert it into something that's very needed by this department. So we're excited to get this done. It's in the final stages. We're committed to getting it done before the semester starts. So I have two more weeks maybe to wrap everything up. So you can see the pictures aren't quite there, but we're making steady progress day by day. Very similarly, this time in Davis, we're reconfiguring a space for the meteorology lab to bring it up to more state-of-the-art conditions. Similar upgrades that I mentioned at the Anderson and also a donation-based improvement that we're making. And again, making good progress to get it done before the semester starts. And of course, some of the larger renovations we're doing on campus. Neptune Project has been a multi-year effort. For those of you who've been around since we originally got this approval back in 2017, we've been taking advantage of breaks in the academic areas so we could get in to renovate various spaces during the summer and winter predominantly. But the East Wing in particular had not been occupied, so it was an opportunity over the past year really to go in and renovate that space to something better that we haven't been able to take advantage of. So I'm going to highlight a little bit more about that East Wing here on the next slide. What really was enhanced in the East Wing is not only just a general upgrade to the rooms themselves, but the introduction of air conditioning. So the entire complex, with the exception of the central core, did not previously have air conditioning. So this was something we pushed ourselves to figure out, how do we do this cost effectively? And you can see the air conditioning units sticking out on the wall there that I circled. Kind of a hotel sort of approach to it, but it allowed us to do a cost effective introduction of air conditioning. Bathroom upgrades as well, trying to make them more fresh and modern, and also accommodate privacy concerns, so individual changing areas and accommodating those gender inclusive issues that we always want to strive to improve around campus. And again, we're rushing to get this done before the semester starts. We're committed to occupy this building for this semester. So move-ins, again, in another week and a half or so. Homes, the bigger project that's been going on over the past year, we've been very excited to see the progress. A lot of this progress has not been in the public eye because it's kind of difficult to take people through the interior of a construction project. But a little bit you might have been able to see from the outside. Just the other day, seeing a big concrete mixers and pumpers drawing concrete into the southern area of the homes with the MLK Commons new entrance. To me, that's very exciting to see construction equipment like that. And maybe the rest of you, it was quite boring. But again, to remind you a little bit about the layout. To walk you through the overall ground floor layout, we're going to have that refreshened transportation area, that transit area. As I walk around to the right side here, when the new bookstore location, the new entrance to the MLK Commons to the south side of the building, the new student leadership area up to the upper part of the slide here, wrapping around, we'll also have a Starbucks and a Qdoba food venue, and then the food venue and intersection with the Husky Den is another enhancement that we're making. So again, in the interest of not being able to take everyone through an active construction site, there's a few pictures to try to give you a little feel about some of these areas. On the far left side, this is a new dramatic stairwell that's going to connect the prior dining area of the Husky Den down to the Husky Den activity area where the bowling alley is and everything. That entrance didn't exist before, so this is going to provide a much more interactive accessibility between these two spaces. The OASIS space down at the bottom of the slide here, the OASIS stands for Organizations and Student Involvement Suite, if I got that right. I'm seeing head nod, that's good. And so that's the student leadership area, revamping what we want to draw out of the campus life building so we can bring some vigor and excitement and activities to the home's student center, and that's why it was named that way. The landscaping on the right side of the slide here, that new entrance to the south side, that's where you can see as you glimpse through the construction fence there, a lot of activity trying to reconfigure the landscaping to make that ground entrance totally accessible, but also accommodate the terrain features that we have on that side. The north entrance, not as dramatic, but getting a new fresh look to the north doors up there. That north door previously only allowed you limited access into the building. Now it's going to allow direct access into that food area, and it's going to be a much more usable entrance to the home's facility. A few more photos there. I won't elaborate on those, but I'll reiterate the timeline. So we are quickly coming upon our commitment to finish the construction in the October time period. That will give us the months of November and December to operationalize and restart a lot of the operations there. So between dining and the home staff, we're busy trying to figure out and gear up for that restart of all the activities. And the one activity I'll point out at the end is the Qdoba food venue. That is going to linger a little bit into the next semester, but still tracking very smartly. But we'll open up the ground floor with the exception of the Qdoba this fall. So we're getting very excited about that. Other limited improvements that we're making in the dining, and this one on the far western side of campus, Stevenson, given that a refreshed look, this is going to be orientated around an Urbitz and Gerberts franchise. If you remember, we brought that issue to the board a while ago, and this is going to be the introduction and application, I should say, of that franchise application there. We're going to operate that ourselves, but it is going to be based around an Urbitz and Gerberts food menu and system. And there also is going to be a C-store upgrade out there. So to provide a nice option for the western side of campus. Then flipping to the other side of campus, on the east side here in the Barsima Hall, we're going to refresh the prior Three Sons Cafe and bring that with a new menu, new healthy choices. And that is going to be something we're also wrapping up before the semester starts, so we're at the tail end of getting all that work completed. Less visible, but in my mind, just as important, making sure that the building systems are being taken care of, because I hate the idea of improving the inside of a building just to have water come through the roof or other building systems fail on us. So I just wanted to highlight there's a number of these that we do around campus all the time, and they don't get a lot of visibility because they're not that visible to everyone. But in this case, we refurbished some roof to get a little bit more life out of it. Eventually, we're going to have to replace this roof, but this is going to buy us a little bit more time before we can get to that major repair. Another underlying system, this one I'm highlighting because it's taken advantage of state funding. It's been a rarity to see some state funding, but we have gotten some in FY19, and this is one example where we've been able to take advantage of that. About $500,000 to make improvements to streamline valves and expansion joints, which may not be very important in a lot of people's minds, but it gives us a lot of ability to manage our steam lines more effectively and deal with outages and isolating problems where we have them. You may look at those pictures and say, yeah, it looks like a bunch of pipes. And in my mind, that's a pretty beautiful picture, just as exciting as a space renovation might be. The boiler replacement, another big project that the state is contributing a significant amount of money. This is a combined state-funded project with our auxiliary reserves to be the first phase of our boiler replacement process. So we're going to get two boilers in the anticipation that a final set of four boilers might be needed to address our steam needs and heating needs, I should say, and the anticipated footprint that that might occupy. We are in the early stages of getting the design arranged with the Capital Development Board, but it's making steady progress and probably will be executed construction-wise over the 2020 and 2021 time period, so a longer-term project. So in summary, I just wanted to kind of highlight what you're seeing out of the mix of these projects. You're seeing a mixture of larger projects, smaller projects that are targeted investments here and there. You're seeing a mixture of funding sources. You're seeing a mixture of space enhancements and background infrastructure improvements, and that's good. It's trying to get everything accomplished to the needs that we have across campus. And lastly, I just wanted to comment, there's more to come. And with the state authorizations that we've already previously talked about and trying to gear up for, making sure we're making the best investment that we can with the available money sources that we have. Between the state's funding, our own funding, donation funding, whatever the case may be, it's a constant, I'll say, challenge to make sure we're putting the dollars where we need them the most and have the most impact. So with that, I'll wrap up my conversation and see if there's any questions.
Montel?
Quick question. I got actually three. I saw the slide with the number of vendors that were going to be in the Home Student Center at the top Starbucks, because I'm a Starbucks guy, you know. But I wanted to know about how those vendors were selected, and can you talk about student participation in that process?
I can, and I may need to draw in a little bit of help, because this was an effort that we partnered with Student Affairs and the home staff and everything, trying to figure out what's the right configuration of venues that are going to draw and meet the needs of the campus. So prior, there was a larger effort to do a concept design. And a significant amount of money was spent on developing a concept design for the Holmes project to make sure we had the right approach. And part of that was getting consultants to advise us on what they thought food venues might be, and then engaging students and staff around campus with surveys and the like, focus groups to make sure we got that input to consider there. So. Thank you. Help me.
So I can give you a little bit more context. As John was talking about, when we worked with our consultants with Home Student Center, they did a lot of focus groups and extensive research with our faculty, staff, and students. What are the patterns in terms of eating and walking across campus, and where does that need to be, and gave us some really solid recommendations. We created a criteria by which we would select vendors. And that there are lots of different things that came into not only affordability, sustainability of the brand, health factors, how healthy the food is, the mix of the food. A successful dining strategy is a menu mix of different options on campus, so you're really appealing to all of the students. Lastly, I would say that we do have a food advisory board that we keep in contact with that gives us consistent feedback about all of our dining facilities and gives us ideas about what might be best in next practices. So it's a combination of not only the research, but also our interactions with students that really inform these choices.
Can you talk about the employment opportunity? Will that be employed by students, or are those local residents running these operations?
Yep, these are our franchises. So we've purchased them. They will be all NIU employees, and that's a combination of full-time employees, professional employees of all of NIU, as well as obviously this is a great opportunity for student employment and students to learn a lot of skills on the job, and we really value providing that opportunity for students not only to be able to fund their education, but also to really learn some things and have on-the-job training.
Very good. The last question I have is about the boilers. A boiler's huge, right? Does it require any kind of deconstruction of the building in order to get that thing in and out?
Very good question. And so let me take a moment to think how I want to answer this. What you see in this diagram here, and it may not make sense to you, if I can orientate you a little bit, the upper blue box I show there is our existing west plant. Just to the right on the slide there is where the Lincoln Complex is, and over to the left is the Grant Complex, just to orientate you on the campus a little bit. What we're envisioning is that we're going to have to build onto that facility to accomplish the new boilers. Why? We have to keep boiler production, steam production going while the construction is happening. So I can't really stop everything, and especially not knowing how long it's going to take to do all this, we rely on our existing system to keep running. So that's going to be part of the challenge during the construction is how do we keep everything running while we're still doing this construction and then have a tie-in and a flip over at the last moment when we're ready to cut the ribbon, for example. So I'm envisioning that it's going to be a new structure. At this concept that we developed, it was envisioned to be on the south side of that structure and where we would put eventually possibly four boilers in the final makeup.
Would you take the old boilers apart then and take them out?
Yeah, and so that would be a subsequent phase where we would decommission those boilers, even decommission the East Steam plant back here in back of Altgeld. So we're not quite to that stage of figuring out when and exactly how we would do that, and then what would we do with that remaining space. So it is going to be a little complication. The West plant, we probably can reuse that space because that would be a central location for all steam production. The East plant over here, we're probably going to decommission the entirety of the East steam plant, and then we'll have to figure out, do we demolish that end of Altgeld or do something different?
You know, you'd make John's day if you asked about the pipes and the and the valves.
When you wrap those pipes, did you?
I can see John being a fun guy at parties. You know, look at this boiler.
Can I actually add something?
That guy can really sing. He's got great pipes.
You know, you've made John's day, but I want to give a shout out to our heating plant employees who keep those 60-year-old boilers running despite the fact that we don't really have the ability to buy parts. Yes. And we have a lot of weather here in Northern Illinois, and they do a valiant job every day. They did a great job this past winter, and they don't get enough credit, so give them a shout out.
John, I took a tour of the Home Student Center last week. Happy to take that tour and appreciate the tour that I was given. Extremely impressed. That's going to be a great facility for students, faculty, staff, for the community. It's awesome. One thing that I did notice, though, and I would just like to hear your comments or Dr. Freeman's comments, we are going to have a bar there serving alcohol. during specific hours of the day. From a security standpoint, want to make sure that somebody doesn't get overserved. And so is there training that we're going to put our bartenders, if that's the right word to use, through relative to over-serving people? And then do we plan to have any security there just in case somebody does get out of control?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, having this type of serving alcohol within a student union isn't necessarily unheard of. It's actually, you would find it relatively something that you find in lots of institutions. So we have lots of good models out there to draw from, and most recently have really worked with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who has two unions, to really understand how they manage alcohol. So there's going to be lots of things in place. So you have to be over 21. You have to have a signifier, if that's a wristband or something like that, limited drinks, not hard alcohol. All of those things will be incorporated into the plan. I want to remind us that we serve alcohol on this campus and have a licensure to do that. So this is just an extension of the work that we already do. So in the work that we already do with alcohol, we already have like the tips training and, you know, all of those safeguards are already put in place. And so we will extend those policies, procedures into this facility, but also make sure that they're ready to really manage this in a responsible way. We'll monitor what that looks like in terms of hours to make sure we're being responsible. But at the end of the day, this is also an opportunity not only to build community, but also to educate about responsible alcohol use and to really model some healthy, good behaviors for our students who are learning about how they manage this in their life or choose not to.
Right. Well, and to the point that Trustee Gales made, and I know that we plan to do this, but I would just reemphasize our hospitality students and other majors on our campus that deal with service and such. I mean, let's just make sure we take every opportunity we can to incorporate students into this learning process, because experiential learning is the best learning.
Absolutely. We partner with our folks in health and the hospitality programs regularly and always look to expand that and looking ways that we can do that differently in the residence halls as well as at other venues of Home Student Center that haven't necessarily been touched through this renovation. We value that opportunity, and it's a really strong partnership that we have.
But it's going to be a fantastic center. I can't wait for the opening. It's going to be wonderful. Great job. Great job.
Yeah. You mentioned the alcohol policy, right? I'm curious, how are we going to deal with on January 1 when cannabis is legal? And the statute that I've seen, it says it's to be treated like alcohol.
So we have a group that's working on campus, and that's working in collaboration with the City of DeKalb Police and the surrounding community, Sycamore, as well, thinking about what legal recreational cannabis means for our community and the larger university community. As a campus, we will continue to adhere to the Drug-Free School Act, and we will continue to be smoke-free. So the change on our campus is probably less dramatic than people are imagining. Okay. But certainly we have all the concerns that are existing in other communities around Illinois. Like those other communities, we also have the opportunity to speak with communities in the states that have gone before us and universities in the states that have gone before us. And we're in the process of doing that. We're being very proactive. So we're not waiting till December 31st to get prepared. And we can report out to the board on this at a later date.
Any other discussion? Montel, I might mention that when we were selecting food, they actually did include the trustees as well for, you know, what we liked, and there were students and faculty and everything. So I thought that was very well done.
Very good.
John, do you have any time after the, well, I'm not sure what time will be done today, go over and look at homes? Is that possible? Or
anything's possible. I just need to limit you to no more than two, but
I
can make whatever arrangements.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. If there is no, I guess we don't have anything to vote on here. So back to you, Sarah.
Thanks. We have one final briefing. Sarah Garner, our Ethics and Compliance Officer, will provide an Ethics and Compliance update. And Sarah's update is in response to a request by our FACFO committee previously to hear about the progress with her office.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, Board. I'm Sarah Garner. I am our Ethics Compliance Officer as well as our Town Line Coordinator. So today I'm going to present to you about the Ethics and Compliance Office. So today we're going to talk about a little bit about the background, which is the creation of the office. What is our portfolio? What services do we provide to the campus? Our plans for FY20, as well as open up for any questions you may have. So the Ethics and Compliance Office was introduced a little over a year ago during the June 14th board meeting. The creation of the office is in alignment with the Board of Trustees priority number 5, which you can see here, as well as the 2018 presidential goal number 4. Both of these speak to building a culture of ethics, accountability, and transparency on our campus. After the office was launched, I served in acting capacity until April, in which I became permanent after a search was conducted. So the current portfolio of the Ethics Compliance Office, ECO is just the acronym that we use. We do internal investigations of civil rights violations. We have our ethics, all of our ethics-related inquiries, university-wide compliance, our policy library, IT accessibility, as well as Title IX compliance. Here is the organizational structure of our office. As you can see, as Ethics Compliance Office, I report to Dr. Freeman, and all Title IX related matters, I report to Dr. Ingram as Executive Vice President Provost. I also want to give a shout out to my hardworking staff who are here today. They're the best I could ask for, so nothing's possible without good hardworking staff. All right, so on to the first topic, internal investigations. So ECO is responsible for investigating complaints of civil rights violations, including discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and Title IX sexual misconduct. We're also responsible for the university policies related to state and federal civil rights legislation, most notable those two policies that I have before you today. In addition to the formal investigation work, we also provide a lot of informal advice to departments. For example, someone may not know how to respond to a complaint or how to be supportive to students and staff who may be involved in investigation, so we'll troubleshoot those things with departments very frequently. Lastly, when a matter is becoming criminal nature as well, this is typically around Title IX sexual misconduct. We coordinate very closely with our campus law enforcement in making sure that our response is appropriate. Moving on to ethics, we also provide advice regarding a variety of topics set forth within our State Officials and Employees Ethics Act, as well as our Illinois Governmental Ethics Act. We conduct investigations of alleged unethical conduct. These complaints are either referred to us from our Office of Executive Inspector General or filed internally with the university. Also, when there's a matter that OEIG is handling, we would act as a liaison to OEIG, for example, for information requests. In March, employees always look forward to completing statements of economic interests as well as the board members. So we facilitate that process for our employees and our board members on campus. Lastly, in conjunction with Human Resource Services, we provide annual updates to our training, both for new employees and board trainings, as well as with the implementation of the annual training for all employees. University-wide compliance effort is fairly new to the university and exciting to really have it fit NIU. To note, university-wide compliance is different than compliance functions that may sit elsewhere at the university. For example, research compliance and athletics compliance are housed in those departments. As part of this piece, an inventory of state and federal laws is currently being gathered, as well as an associated compliance calendar is in the process of being developed. So to assist with information sharing, we work closely with General Counsel and our state legislative liaison in reviewing state laws and disseminating information to senior leaders. Lastly, we assist departments in answering compliance questions and point them to available resources. The university's record retention program will also fall under the umbrella of compliance on the university. The policy library is an area that Dr. Hunt presented on a few board meetings ago, so I don't want to go too in-depth about this information. But as you can see, the policy librarian develops and manages a policy library and identifies policies for revision. She's currently reached out to departments regarding the 3-year cycle and also engages with shared governance and departments on policy development and revision. IT accessibility. So our information technology accessibility officer, Katie Whitelaw, is housed within our department. This position provides outreach and education to campus regarding accessibility laws and regulations and best practices. Katie's always available for on-call trainings and, related to her area of expertise. All technology purchase requests must be approved by Katie. On the front end, we're also involved in the RFP process to ensure accessibility of technology. For example, Katie was on the front end regarding accessibility for the mobile messaging software for the Office of Admissions and the emergency notification system for the Department of Police and Public Safety. She also reviews web pages and applications for accessibility and is the main point of contact for troubleshooting accessibility concerns. This position also collaborates with the DRC, Housing and Mechanical Engineering, in developing a Braille overlay for all of our washers on campus that were not accessible to people. And also was pivotal in providing more wheelchair-accessible printers on campus. Title IX compliance. Last and certainly not least, Title IX compliance falls under our umbrella. However, this work does require a lot of cross-divisional collaboration, including working very closely with Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion and Student Affairs. As discussed earlier, oversight over internal investigations falls from the purview as MIA's Title IX coordinator. This also requires researching and understanding federal and state laws and best practices regarding the adjudication process. We're constantly reading new court opinions and staying up to date with what's going on at a state and federal level to best position ourselves for any changes that may occur. We also engage in advocacy related to sexual misconduct in the workplace and academic setting. For example, I spearheaded the comment that NAU submitted to the proposed Title IX regulations that are soon to come out any day now, allegedly. And we also collaborated with Research Compliance and Sponsored Programs Administration to implement the new National Science Foundation Terms and Conditions Related to Sexual Harassment and upcoming similar requirements being imposed on NASA-funded research. We also partner in the development of annual training for students and staff, and also for specialized training. For example, all of our CAs came on campus this week, so we did training for all of our new CAs on what is Title IX and how to report information. I also serve as an internal and external point of contact for Title IX related matters, and we're a member of various campus and community groups related to sexual misconduct. For example, I'm a member of the grant that we have for the Department of Justice Office on Violence Against Women's that Dr. Edchild Walden is our PI on. This is great because it's a really exciting time to build together our campus as well as local partners in identifying how we can have best practices regarding sexual misconduct in our response. This also requires us doing a 360 review of all of our programming around bystander intervention, increased advocacy, as well as our trauma-informed response. I also chair our NIU Sexual Misconduct and Assault Response Team and a member of our DeKalb County Sexual Assault Response Team. So what's coming up? So as we enter FY20, there are areas which I would like to further develop. First, we will be hiring a records management specialist to begin acting on the ideas of the record management program. This position is new and it's part-time, project-based. It's also consistent with other Illinois state institutions who have a position of this nature already established on their campus. We're also looking to do more outreach and awareness regarding all functions by partnering with other departments. When I was going through my search process, one of the ideas was to do an ethics roadshow, and I really liked that idea, and I really want to run with it and have targeted training to groups who may have faced some ethics issues that are particular for that department. So I'm really excited to increase awareness about ethics, compliance, investigations, et cetera. We're also looking to expand university education on university-wide compliance by providing more information to campus about state and federal mandates. With the development of the compliance calendar, I plan to use that as a platform to be a resource for departments. I also envision a partnership with Enterprise Risk Management in further developing compliance. Title IX compliance is also about to change with new proposed regulations out there regarding our adjudication process. The SMART group that I mentioned before has been really proactive in developing an online interactive platform to students to engage in regarding if I've been subjected to sexual misconduct, where are some options for me, where should I go to get information? And all of these platforms in here do have opportunities for increased collaboration, like I said, with diversity, equity, inclusion, with student affairs, with finance. So I'm really excited for what this office is to bring. And that's it. Any questions?
Good job. Thank you.
Anyone have questions?
I was trying to look up on my phone, but there's a week that's coming up in October or November that is Ethics Week in the College of Business.
Okay.
So I didn't know if you were tied into that, but if you aren't, I would suggest you reach out to them. And I applaud you for wanting to bring ethics to each of the colleges. I know it already exists, but it would be great to have you as part of that. But there is an ethics week in the College of Business. It's one of the weeks in October or November.
Yep, and that's actually the same time frame where we do our annual training. So our annual ethics training for employees runs beginning of October through end of November.
Just to add in with that too, I always carried this with me. This comes out of the College of Business as well. It's the belief card. And it's about, you know, ethics. So.
Where does ADA compliance exist? I mean, I know there's oversight, but and not to drill down into it today because we're not prepared, but I, at some point in time, it would be good to get an ADA compliance report to the board on a campus-wide basis.
Are you talking about workplace accommodations or regarding like facilities?
Specifically, I'm speaking of facilities.
Okay.
But I'm sure there's much more to it that I'm not aware of. But
sure. So that that function is actually with Vernice Edgehill-Walton in her portfolio, and we can convene offline and identify a way to get the appropriate update to you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
That presentation. That presentation concluded the university business.
All right. Are there any other matters to come before this committee?
Eric, I just wanted to make one statement. I wanted to say thank you to Sarah and her staff for getting us ready for these meetings. They break down the information in such a way that it's digestible, and it gets us prepared for this meeting, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have a great team. They're all represented here, so a lot of work went into it, and thank you for that.
Thank you. Anything else? So the next regular meeting of this committee will be November 14, 2019. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Is there a second? I see Matt orchestrating here. So
5 minutes.
So 5 minutes, so we'll re-adjourn at how about 11:35? All those in favor of adjourning the meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Congratulations. I'm a sociologist.